Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Between the Ropes podcast. I am Brian Fritz. Coming up on the podcast today, a conversation with Kevin Kelly, the voice of New Japan Pro Wrestling, as we talk about everything that is going on with New Japan from the upcoming G1 Climax tournament, which begins here in just under 2 weeks from now. Kevin is going to be over in Japan, handling all of the commentary for New Japan World for that. All 19 of the G1 Climax tournament events are going to be broadcast on New Japan World and also going to be broadcast in English. So Kevin will be handling the play-by-play for all 19 of those shows during the month of the G1 Climax tournament. So we get into that. Plus, we talk about the growth of New Japan Pro Wrestling, kind of where independent wrestling is right now with New Japan a part of it. And we also talk about the New Japan Dominion show, which of course saw Kenny Omega beat Kazuchika Okada to become the IWGP heavyweight champion. And we talk about what it was like for Kevin to be on the call on that match, and just Okada as a champion, what this means for New Japan, Omega going forward as a champion. So a lot to get into with the conversation with myself and Kevin. That is coming up here in just a couple of minutes. In the meantime, a couple of reminders. Please subscribe to the Between the Ropes podcast. You can find us on iTunes. We're on Stitcher, the TuneIn app, Blog Talk Radio, just about anywhere that you can get podcasts. That is where you will find the Between the Ropes podcast. So please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast as well. You can also follow us on Twitter. We're at Between the Ropes. You can follow me personally on Twitter. I'm at Brian Fritz. And you can check out the Facebook page as well. We're at facebook.com/Between the Ropes. And a special mention to everybody that is supporting us on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/Between the Ropes. Sign up there, support us. Even if it's only $1 a month, it goes a long way to helping us out. But we do have some tiers there, even for the $5 a month tier. If you support us with that amount each month, you'll get the ad-free version of the weekly Between the Ropes podcast. By the way, two podcasts this week because of this one, the interview with Kevin Kelly, plus the regular weekly podcast where we talk about everything that's going on in the week in wrestling. So you get the ad-free version of the podcast, plus you will get a couple of bonus podcasts per month. Sometimes you talk about wrestling. Sometimes we're talking about the movies, TV, pop culture, whatever, but a couple extra podcasts for everybody that's supporting us on Patreon in the $5 and up tiers. Speaking of that, and speaking of Between the Ropes overall, I wanted to bring this up. I've thrown it out there on social media already on our Facebook page and on Twitter, but I also wanted to bring it up here on the podcast. So as we continue to move forward here with Between the Ropes, I wanted to get some feedback from everybody that listens to the podcast, that supports us, that follows along with everything that we do. And basically, because there are so many different ways to do everything when it comes to podcasts and what kind of content you're providing, you know, we are not typically doing show recaps. We've done that in the past, but we've kind of gotten away from that. And now we're just talking about the things that really stand out in the week in WWE television. We're talking about some of the bigger stories and just kind of going into deeper dives on particular subjects and the direction that WWE and other places are going. And of course, we talk about big shows. We make some predictions for upcoming pay-per-views, all that kind of jazz. It's kind of what we do right now. But I wanted to get some feedback from everybody that's listening to the podcast on what you like that we do and what you would like to see us do more of. And that comes with the podcast. Like, what kind of content would you like us to do more of? If there's anything in particular, do you like it when we talk about non-wrestling stuff here? Are you okay with us doing that or even doing it for all the people that support us on Patreon? If you like some more entertainment stuff or if you don't like entertainment stuff, please let me know that. If there's something in particular when it comes to wrestling that you would like us to focus on more or do more of, please pass that along as well. That's what this is. I just want to hear feedback from all the listeners, from everybody out there in the audience to tell us what you would like to hear more of. And also, you know, what other things would you like us to do? Because we've done video interviews with wrestlers. Those are typically at bigger events. That's when we have access to them. And it's not feasible. It's not realistic for us to do that all the time. We try to do it any chance that we get, but it's just not going to happen all the time. But, you know, there are other ways to do video content. And if that's something you would like to see more of, let me know. And if that is, in fact, something you'd like to see more of, what kind of content would you like? Would you like shorter content? Would you like news content on there? Like I said, there's a ton of different things that you can do, whether it's, you know, the podcast, whether, like I said, it's a quick news update, something that's done several times a week, different things like that. Come up with different ideas. If there's something that really stands out and something that you would like us to do, whether it comes to the podcast, whether it comes to video, you know, anything that we can do, even when it comes to the website. And I know that's something we've kind of ignored or something that we haven't focused on a lot when it comes to written content on the website. But if that's something that you would like to see more of, if that's something that you're interested in, please let me know. Say, hey, I want more content on the website, and let me know what you'd like to see. Like, would you like something with us doing a post or keeping up with the latest big stories that are out there? Would you be okay with like a once a day or maybe even twice a day kind of all the biggest news stories and links and stuff like that? We've done something like that in the past. Would you like some opinion columns? Like, there's tons of different things you can do, of course, when it comes to content. So let me know what you are interested in when it comes to this podcast, when it comes to video, when it comes to the website. Also for Patreon subscribers, for people that support us on Patreon, because, you know, you're paying us, you're giving us money, which we deeply appreciate. But I want to make sure that you are getting your money's worth. So if you are helping us out and there's different tiers or different things that you would like to get for giving us $5 a month or $10 a month for those tiers, please let me know. Tell me what we can do better. Things that you would like to hear, things that you would like to see, content that you would like, different things that we can provide. Please let me know and I'll listen to all the suggestions and we'll work on that. You know, hopefully there will be some things that we can realistically do that we can focus on and, we can change and we can provide that for everybody because we want to make sure that the audience is happy. We want to make sure you like the content that we're providing. I hope that you like that so far. I have a lot of fun doing it. I've done it for a long time. And I like talking about some non-wrestling stuff sometimes as well, but I know the focus is on wrestling. And I just want to make sure that there's something for everybody that's out there, that you're happy with the content that you're getting. And there's something more that you want, something more you want us to focus on. Or if there's even something that you don't like, you know, please let me know and I'll take everything under consideration. So you can hit me up. I'll tell you what, here's the easiest way to get in touch with me. Either let me know on Twitter at Between the Ropes. Put it on there. You can go to the Facebook page. I've got a post that's sitting right there at the top. Go to facebook.com/between the ropes. We've got it there. Or send me an email, btrmailbag@gmail.com. Send it there and I'll take everything under advisement. Like I said, there aren't any bad ideas. There's some things that probably will not be realistic that we can do, but feel free to send those ideas along. I want to hear these ideas and I want to make sure that the audience is happy with the content that we're providing. And I want to try to do some more stuff or at least focus on things that you like. So like I said, if it's audio, if it's video, if it's different things for everybody supporting us on Patreon, please let me know. If there's something that you say, hey, you know what? I'm not supporting you on Patreon right now, but if you did this, I would. Let me know what that thing is and we'll try to work on that because, you know, that's beneficial to us from the standpoint that if you like what we're doing enough that you're willing to pay us per month, that's fantastic. That helps me out a lot. But, you know, it's got to be worth it for you as well. You have to see value in the content, obviously. So if you're going to give us $5 a month, $10 a month, whatever, let me know what I can do to earn that money from you. And I will try to do that. And like I said, when it comes to Patreon, if you want to give us $1 or $2 a month, $3 a month, that goes a long way in helping us out as well. And just, you know, paying for some of the different costs and doing the things we do. And also just being able to dedicate time towards doing Between the Ropes. And that just shows that you really like what we're doing and you want to support us. So if you can do that, go to our Patreon page. Like I said, patreon.com/between the ropes. And I want to hear all of your ideas, whether it's for people that are on Patreon or you would support us on Patreon if we did something, or even just when it comes to the podcast video wise, all these different things. So send me your ideas. I want to hear from you. Give me some ideas, everybody. Let's get to the interview with Kevin Kelly. Joining me is the voice of New Japan Pro Wrestling. He is world traveler Kevin Kelly, fresh off a trip over to England, and he is ready to go here with me today. Is that about right? World traveler now?
Yes, and we're on our own journey today. I kind of like this.
Oh, I like that. I like where you're taking that. See, this is why you are a master of words and why you are calling New Japan Pro Wrestling.
It's the only thing I can do good. I use words good.
I like that. That's good. I mean, it's keeping you busy these days. I mean, New Japan, you just went to England. You did some stuff for Rev Pro. They're keeping you busy out there these days, aren't they?
No doubt. And it's great. It's all kind of harmonious, you know, with Rev Pro and New Japan Pro Wrestling, because not just only was it the, you know, Strong Style of Ob UK shows with New Japan stars appearing on them, but the two companies have sort of interwoven title rivalries with some of the, you know, top stars. So it makes sense. And the shows will, the shows are airing, both events are on rpwondemand.com, but then at some point, and I don't know exactly when, they're also going to be available on New Japan World. It's where it all is heading eventually. I see a time, not today, not tomorrow, but where one admission price gets you into New Japan World, gets you into Rev Pro, gets you into CMLL perhaps, and if Ring of Honor is smart, it'll get you into that. If we're all working together, then why not all make it accessible to all of our fans? Otherwise, we're not really working together.
Exactly. I mean, all the companies are already working together for the most part anyway. So why not do something, you know, with an OTT platform that can benefit everybody? And it's kind of a one-stop shop for all fans. I think that's probably the best way to get more exposure for everybody as well. That if you go there and you go there, say you're going to say, I'm going to watch some New Japan, but then you run into a Rev Pro show or CMLL or something else, maybe you become a bigger fan of that as well.
The only way to get crossover is to make it all available for all platforms. There is nothing wrong with going back in and re-editing a Rev Pro show, for example, that's airing on New Japan World. Send them the file with a lower third that pops up every 5 minutes that says, to be able to see these events, you can also subscribe to rpwondemand.com. They could do that tomorrow. Eventually, though, we are going to get to this sort of one price gets all admission scenario with apps and with mobile connectivity and push notifications from, you know, the companies from all over the world. It's in a more synchronized SMS. It's just going to work. It's just going to get there.
So tell me what the audience is like when you go and do a show in the UK, because we can see it on television, but if you're not there, you don't really feel it. Because I think the biggest reaction, or the biggest way that maybe us dumb Americans over here get to when it comes to a UK crowd, is, you know, like during WrestleMania weekend, whether it's a Ring of Honor show or a WWE show. And, you know, they have this kind of knack of being like this very loud, boisterous, kind of sometimes out of control, but really into it audience. So what's it like calling a show there in the UK in front of that audience? And what are they like there?
It was a great crowd that liked good wrestling. They had times where they sang their songs, and that was during Ospreay and during Zack Sabre Jr. They were quiet when there was wrestlers that they weren't quite too familiar with, like they were trying to figure out Great Okarn, the new look for Tomoyuki Oka. And they made tons of noise and knew all the songs. They knew, they sang right along with Kaze Nina Ray when Minoru Suzuki came out. They reacted as any great wrestling crowd would, regardless of the postal code. It was wonderful. And Ryan, I got to meet several generations of wrestling fans, because they did meet and greets both days that they had set up. And I heard from a lot of fans, a lot of current New Japan World subscribers, who had a lot of nice things to say. Then I also heard from a lot of former WWE fans who said, hey, I've just gotten back into wrestling after not having watched since I was young, and you were on the TV interviewing The Rock. So I had, you know, a blend of both. A lot of UK fans are, some had been with New Japan since, you know, the days of Ustream, the days of whatever, when they had to pay $250 for pay-per-view for to see the whole G1, or, hey, I just recently signed up as late as Dominion to see Okada and Omega 4. It ran the gamut. So it was a little bit of everything. It was nothing that I didn't expect, but I was pleasantly surprised to see so many. It wasn't this myopic, you know, hey, there's a bunch of 35-year-old middle-aged men sitting there with their arms crossed. It was kids, it was women, it was men, it was older fans, newer fans. It was a little bit of everything, and it was wonderful.
And that's the thing that I wonder about, too, when we talk about, you know, wrestling, whether it's people that are coming back to it, or maybe there's been some things when it comes to WWE that they're not fans of, like where are they going for the wrestling? And I feel like there's more people watching wrestling than ever before. It's not just watching one or two shows that are on TV. It's watching everything else that's on there, because there is so much good wrestling around the world right now. And I think there's something for everybody. I mean, we could talk about that in the past, but there really is something for everybody that's out there right now, isn't there?
There really is. And there have been eras and times where many, many more fans have watched wrestling than there are today. But there are more options for fans to watch wrestling today. But it sort of goes within the times, because it's kind of like in the first days of cable. And I remember having this conversation with you once before. So to any fans who've heard this talk before, we apologize in advance. But in the early days of cable, it was sort of like whatever's hot, whatever wrestling is on, cable networks are going to grab it and put it on. And that's the reason why people who lived in Florida got to see everything from Championship Wrestling from Florida to the Madison Square Garden shows, to Southwest, to Mid-South, to Memphis, and Georgia, and everything in between. It's kind of that way now, where with so many options through OTT platforms now that fans can gravitate towards it, plus they're seeing snippets and pieces of it in GIF form on Instagram or social media, there's a lot of potential long-term connectivity with fans. But I think that everybody sort of comes in and out now, as opposed to living and dying and hanging on a weekly product. I must go to the Louisville Gardens every Tuesday night. That world doesn't exist anymore. This is the world that we're in now, and we're seeing how companies are successful in when they do promote a show. And when you look at what Rev Pro was able to do this weekend, 2,600 on Saturday night in Milton Keynes, and then over 3,000 in Manchester on Sunday, and without the full New Japan crew, it was, you know, we didn't have Omega, we didn't have Naito, we didn't have Tanahashi. We had Okada, we had Chaos. Chaos had a strong presence on the show. And we had Suzuki-gun. And that was enough to draw the big houses. So what's that going to mean for the future for Rev Pro? And what might a return to the UK look like? What type of arena would be necessary if there was a scenario where you did see a Tetsuya Naito, Hiroshi Tanahashi, Kazuchika Okada, and Kenny Omega all on the same bill, along with the stars of, you know, the UK and others? It'd be amazing to see what size arena would be necessary for that.
I was at the Daytona Beach show this past weekend that had Kenny Omega and Naito were there, part of the CEO video game conference that they did there. And they did 2,500, 3,000 people. And while most people were there, obviously, for the video game stuff, I mean, that's a damn good audience for, you know, for wrestling as well, because there's going to be part of a crowd that goes to that. That's, they're not into wrestling. I mean, they're there for the video game stuff, but to get that kind of a crowd, that's off the New Japan name. That's off Kenny Omega. That's off Naito being there. That's pretty impressive just to see, like, especially when it comes to Kenny Omega, what his name, what his brand has become, how big of a star he is and how much of a draw he is around the world. Now it's been impressive over the last couple of years just to see that, and the way that he can connect with an audience that's wrestling fans, but also crossing over to the video game world, and just how vast that audience is now, and see what he can do. I mean, this past weekend, I mean, we had New Japan stars running in three different shows, and all of them did well.
Right, exactly. And the folks that were at the Ring of Honor events, they saw, you know, good attendance as well. It's a, again, the product is hot. So they're figuring out how best to apply it. And you saw a scenario this week where on the first night alone, we had 2,600, Kenny had 2,500, that's five. I don't know how big Ring of Honor's house was, but did they draw 3,000 people? Perhaps that's damn close to 10,000 people just to see, kind of New Japan stars in amongst the other regular familiar faces that some fans might see. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things that we're starting to see, too, is that, you know, in the past, when it came to kind of any kind of advertiser, it was, you know, WWE or bust. I mean, that was the recognizable band. Everything else is like, I don't know if I want to do something with them. And even with WWE, it seemed like there could be a finite list of people that wanted to work with them on advertising. You know, there was some negativity that came with working with pro wrestling. But now, I think more companies, more advertisers are more open to it because they see the power of the brands of not only the companies, but the performers themselves. And
Hot Topic is the perfect example.
Yeah.
Hot Topic goes to WrestleMania weekend to check out WWE, sees everybody wearing Bullet Club merch and Young Bucks merch and says, wait a second, hold the phone.
Yeah. And I'm wondering where that's going to go next.
It is more than just the one brand.
Yeah, because that's where I want to see what comes next, because Hot Topic has recognized that and they prospered from it. So who else is going to recognize that and say, hey, you know what? Look at these guys. I mean, look at the following they have on social media. Look at, just how much attention that they get from wrestling, from maybe a video game world, all these different things that there's a lot of different things that could still happen from that standpoint that I'm curious to see where it goes, when see who jumps on board and how that affects everything.
Just the return of the Fire Pro Wrestling World game with New Japan stars in it,
yeah,
I think is going to open up a lot of new younger fans' eyes. That's just one. And we're seeing how that's all going to play off of and what that's going to mean for the future. Because each company that does business with New Japan will look and say, okay, how did they do? What was the return on investment? And let's see what the social media interactivity was and then start to look at those measurables, and they'll decide whether or not they want to do business with the company. So if you do see more, it's not just because, hey, what's this shiny light over here? We have to go follow it too. No, it's because it's been successful. It's worked for a Fire Pro Wrestling World. So therefore, next big company is going to jump in and look to do business with New Japan, and so on and so on and so on. As long as there's an ROI, as long as there's measurables, other companies will jump in and try to mimic the success.
So when it comes to the Fire Pro game that's coming out, when are we going to hear you call the action on that game?
Not this game. I did the spots. I did the commercials for it.
Right.
But they didn't have they don't have English commentary on this game, but, I had a little talk with them, and it's something that they're considering if there is another game. So I would love to be part of that. I've never actually voiced a video game. I've done commercials I've helped work on games, but I have not done the voice for the game, but I would love it.
So do you go to them and say, hey, we have a big English audience, and do you know who I am? I mean, I'm Kevin Kelly. I mean, I am the voice of New Japan Pro Wrestling. Let's make this happen.
Yeah, that's going to work really well. No, they reached out to me through New Japan to voice the commercials in English. So I think that's, they sort of knew who I was through them. That was kind of nice. But I think this game is going to do really well. There seems to be an incredible amount of buzz for it. I'm not the biggest gamer. Hell, I'm in my 50s. But my kids are, and they tell me what's cool, and they're digging it. They're looking forward to it. And they're not per se wrestling gamers, but they're just like, oh, we heard this game is going to be really cool. So awesome.
I saw the commercial in Daytona Beach. They were playing it up on the big screen in between matches. The commercial looked good.
The one where Kenny's getting whooped up on, and old Coda's there for the hot tag.
You know it. That's the one. the first time they showed it, I was like,
form.
It was great. I was like, oh my God, is that the commercial for Fire Pro? And we were just like laughing, and you saw some of the game action. It was great.
Yeah. There's sort of a longer version. It's up on the site now, kind of it's on YouTube now. But it's in Japanese. I also did an English version for that with the, 1989, one game changed the whole world of, wrestling games forever. So, and it kind of walks you through what's available in the game. I think it winds up being like a 17-minute piece At least that's what I saw on the YouTube file. So it'll give fans a look at the game and how the operability and who's in it and what's it all about and why everybody should have it.
I know I'm going to butcher the name, but I want to talk about the new president of New Japan Herald. Is it Meiji?
No, it's May. May. M-A-Y, like the month.
Okay. Like I said, I knew I was going to butcher it. But, you know, I think he's, I just knew I was going to. I'm overthinking it. But he has his own vision for where he wants to take New Japan. I think he has, you know, from his expertise and his business background of what he wants to do next. What places do you think that he's going to be focused on over the next year, 2 years, 5 years, even when it comes to the growth of New Japan?
Well, just the comments that he made about, hey, listen, there's only so much growth available in Japan because there's only so much, you know, so many more live events that can be run. So I think a lot of his is going to be expanding around the world. And he released, you know, the numbers yesterday as we record this on what day is today?
Today's Tuesday. So he released on Monday. Okay. Yep.
He released it on Monday and said that there's over 100,000, you know, about 100,000 subscribers worldwide, with over 40,000 being outside of Japan. Am I quoting those numbers correctly?
Yes. Yep, that's what I saw.
So I think obviously that the fact that they put two line items on that number tells me that there's a lot of focus that's going to be coming up about international expansion. The Japanese fans, it seems like they're not into the apps and the streaming channels in Japan as much as fans in North America might be. And that goes sort of for everything. Like Netflix is a lot smaller and, you know, channels are available on TV and that's it. And everything that's available too on, if a channel has an app as well, any content that's released on the channel doesn't come onto the app for much, much longer after it is aired on the TV. So it's just different. And therefore there's a lot more growth potential, I believe, in that number. You think about what that number represents too, and the number of subscribers that WWE Network has. The conversation, I think, is laughable. Well, who's number two? Who cares? Are you kidding me? It's microscopic compared to WWE Network. But that tells me, as an entrepreneur, that there is so much room for growth. Because if there are 1 million people subscribing to WWE Network, and New Japan in totality has 100,000, holy crap, it's one-tenth, let's go. There's 1 million people, there's 900,000 people out there that have not subscribed to our network that are subscribing to wrestling that potentially could become our fans. So I think that while the, you know, it's imbecilic to say, well, who's number two because we're so far behind, let's start to focus on the growth potential. And I really think that's where Harold May is going to go. I've had a couple conversations with him. Very nice man, easy to work with, easy to talk to, and his success in the toy industry in Japan, but with his global view of having been born in Europe and educated in Europe, but lived in Japan, raised in Japan, I think he's going to do great things for the company.
See, that's one of the things I think people get worked up about too much is like, who's number two? It's just like, it doesn't matter who's number two. Okay. I mean, it does not matter. All that matters is, where's my business going? Is it growing? Are we doing well? Are people happy with the product that we have? What can we do better? What can we continue to do to get better? I mean, that's where the focus is. Don't worry about, oh my God, we're number two. What can we do to be number one? Like, don't even be thinking in that way. I mean, we've seen people try to do that in the past, and we've seen what's happened in the past.
Right. It's the the chase for whatever. And New Japan is not going to be looking to go to war with WWE to try to, you know, close in that gap or whatever. That's so hokey and overdone.
Yeah.
But I do think it just shows you what the potential for your business is and how can New Japan, how could any company look at that number, look at that landscape and not say, wow, we've got a lot of potential customers out there. Let's go. How do we find them?
Yeah. How do we find them and how do we convert them? How do we get them to, you know, enjoy our product right now? And that's why, like, it's funny, like, what was it? 3 years ago, people were like, oh, New Japan, man, they're screwed. They just lost some of their top stars. And then look what's happened to them since then. I mean, guys have stepped up, and it's bigger than ever.
There was a woe is me internally as well.
Sure.
Oh, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Nakamura was a huge blow to them internally.
Right.
You know, of course, foreigners come and go. but Nakamura was one of their own and was a top guy. So took them a little bit over. You know, it was a body blow, but they got up. And everybody's just seized upon that opportunity. And you saw in the booking, because of Kenny beats Nakamura with the one-winged angel at New Year's Dash, and there I think we're seeing who's going to supplant him as the top guy. Do you guys mind I'm on the air with Brian Fritz? Jesus.
The family's happy that you're home. You've been on the road. You've been overseas. They just want to spend time with you. They don't want to share time with me.
No. Well, I don't care. We're doing business. Leave us alone.
Let's go back to June 9th. New Japan Dominion. You've got Okada, Omega, the big match. No time limit. 2 out of 3 falls. So you know that this is going to be a huge match going into this. Obviously, the fourth meeting between these two guys for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. Was there a different kind of approach that you had going into that match, and even the way that you called the other matches on the card before then, leading up to that main event match?
Because I anticipated this time going in what to expect at a minimum. And that was a long match, an epic contest. This one was going to be different because the 2 out of 3 falls. Their first meeting at Wrestle Kingdom 11 caught me by surprise because it went 46-45. Then the rematch Dominion caught me by surprise because it went to a draw. It went the full 60. I knew what the G1 matchup was going to be, only because limited to the 30-minute time limit, and they were at the end of the tournament. There's not going to be a lot left in the tank for these guys. They're going to have to muster up whatever they have left to bring it out into this match. I knew this time too, Brian, that it's humanly impossible to go far beyond the point that they did last year at Dominion. Look at how the two men had completely exhausted themselves just to get to 60. So therefore, how much more could we go? And in theory, they went another 10 with stoppage time. And that's about it. Without the stoppage time, I don't think they go much more than another minute or two, as opposed to wrestling time was 4 minutes more. They weren't going to sit and lay in a hold to draw out the time just to get to 70, 80 minutes. So I pretty much knew this time we're going to get to somewhere between 60 and 70. And once we're one fall each, which is kind of what I felt in my gut, because we're going to go that 60 at least. Then I started going, all right, now I'm working backwards. I know the end is about 10 minutes from here. Where's the opening? Who's going to seize upon it? Each guy had a chance to win. And it was just a question of the race to the finish. Kenny hits the one wing in the middle, 1, 2, 3, and we got a champion. It's magic. It didn't affect the way I called the other matches, because each match has to stand on its own. And each story is as important as the story in the main event. But when you lay out the whole card and you look at Dominion, if you watch the matches individually, or if you watch it in its collective, you can see, if you watch the whole event from start to finish, each match is its own course in the meal. And by the end, it's like, I didn't really feel like I saw the same match twice. I didn't feel like any match lacked. I didn't feel like any match didn't deserve to be on the card. Each held their own in its level of importance, from the opener to the never open weight title match to the inevitable main event. It kind of followed along a good feeling pattern, and that's why the whole event worked and was so successful.
And just so everybody knows, when you go into these shows, you don't know who's going to win. Like, when you're calling the matches.
No. Got no idea.
Yeah.
No idea. Finished this weekend, completely blew my mind. Zack Sabre Jr. and Okada, one-on-one. Zack rolls them up, 1, 2, 3. Wait, what? I lost my freaking mind.
I think it's better that you don't know. I like the way that the commentary comes off, because you're just like the rest of us, wondering where this is going to go. And then we get that payoff at the end. I mean, I like the how authentic it is when somebody doesn't know, and you're calling it like we're watching it.
Yeah, I watch. I do read a lot of what fan anticipation is for the matches.
Sure.
Because I sort of bring some of that into the broadcast. A lot of folks think it could go this way. I've seen some comment about this. And just like you said, we're all in this boat together. None of us know what's going to happen. Let's see how it unfolds. And I do my best to weave in history. And if there's any, you know, if there's any opportunity to say, well, this happened in a previous match and here was the outcome as a result, will this, you know, will the pattern continue here in this matchup? Yeah, it's just amazing. Like Jericho blindsides Naito right in front of us. I did not see Jericho coming. I didn't see him. I guess he got out of the ring from behind Naito, because he came from behind, so it would have had to been. He looped clockwise and clocked Naito, hit him as hard as he could in the back of the head. And I literally almost jumped out of my skin because it completely caught me off guard. And then the way that whole match unfolded, I kept waiting for the come. When is the comeback? When is the comeuppance? And for Jericho to win? Well, it just takes the Intercontinental title, completely puts it on ice. Jericho's not going to come back. He's not going to be defending it on, you know, Kizuna Road. Where are we going to see the belt again? But when we do see the belt again, it's going to be mighty important, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And I can't wait. But yeah, just those moments are made so much better because, you know, it's just like, I know what I'm doing. I know how to call a wrestling match. Let's see what's going on. I know your NBA is a big work, and everybody, you know, they have the finish meeting with Mike Breen, and they go over everything. Come on, let's be fair.
Mike has it on his play sheet. Like, okay, at the 4:38 moment of the fourth quarter, somebody's going to hit a three, and literally has it written down. Bang! That's what he's going to say. Bang! You know, because he knows that's when they're going to hit the shot. You know, so yep.
Well, your Lakers were front page news for about 5 minutes. And then Golden State comes in and, you know.
Yeah, I know, right? Just like, oh.
Cousins, we'll wrap and everybody's like, it's the death of the NBA.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, by the way, so LeBron James is going to the Lakers, okay? So, yeah, you know what? Just in case, you know, people need a reminder of who owns the NBA right now, we're going to go and get Boogie Cousins, and we'll just put a wrap on that, okay? And then just the outrage that has come. I mean, I thought that I saw outrage from like wrestling fans when there's something that they don't like. Like if Roman Reigns, you know, like won the title right now or something like that, you know, just the outrage, like nothing compared to what just happened in the NBA. People are like, don't even play the season. Why should I even watch? They own the league. I mean, you name it. It's all out there right now.
It's amazing too, because you make the great analogy. I can't think of another scenario in wrestling to where if there was an action that did happen, someone would say, well, that's it. The business is over. We're all dead.
Yep.
You know, it was maybe Hogan joining, maybe the NWO, maybe the Outsiders coming in to a small degree, but nothing like this. Nothing like the, you know, and as a Knicks fan, I mean, please, since 94, I've been sitting there waiting for something.
Well, you got Mario Hezonja, so you know you're taking care.
Yeah, okay. Big whoop. And it's like I should be excited by this. He's a good young player. This could be another building block. Along with KP, there's future. I like Fizdale. There's hope. Who cares?
Well, Kevin, it's all work, like you said. I mean, you're getting Kevin Durant after this next season. Don't you know that? That he's making his name in Silicon Valley and Golden State and getting his championships. And then he wants to make a name for himself in New York City. And he wants to be the savior of the Knicks.
And folks in Washington are saying the exact thing. He's going to come home. He's a Maryland guy. This is our chance. Yeah. One and done. And then he's coming our way. Woo. Oh, forget it.
Yeah. He didn't even meet with them the last time he was a free agent, you know, before he made the big move. Didn't even meet with DC. Like, nah, I'm not even interested.
Yeah. I'll do this.
But when it comes to you, like calling matches, I mean, I think the cool element is You call it like it's a sport, like I would watch an NBA game or a football game or whatever. But it's also from a fan perspective as well. It's somebody that enjoys, you know, the sport, who knows the history of the sport. And I think you bring those two elements into calling it. And that's what makes it, you know, is it, like I said, it's like calling a sports game as well. And that there's not going to be, it's not going to be the laughs about it. It's not going to be the hokiness about it. You know, occasionally there'll be some that's comedy and you'll laugh about that. There's some other joke within the commentary team, but it's not like you're going out of your way to find the joke, to find the laugh. And you're calling this as a straightforward, this is sports, this is action, and let's see who is going to be the winner and who's going to be the loser and what comes out of this.
There is very little in my notes, which I always have extensive notes. I have more than I need because, again, I don't know what story they are going to be telling. And there are times, because I bring my other notes with me, that I don't prepare specifically for this event. And more than once, I've been like, wait, I can reference something that I had written down for two events ago. Let me go quickly find that. And then I bring that out. It's, you know, and just like, you know, my, you know, Mike Breen or Marv Albert, they see the flow of the ball around the court. They know where the shot, they're able to anticipate where the shot is coming from, or the way Doc Emrick sees the puck flow around the ice and is able to explain the play. That's kind of how I treat wrestling in that regard. I know where the payoff to the spot could come, and I will try to lead the audience in that direction without being too ahead of things. Let them unfold and let's see. I try not to, I always hated Vince's idea, well, the announcer should know last. No, I don't think so. I hated the announcer being dumb and just asking questions. Well, why would that happen? Where every fan at home is going, we absolutely know why, dumbass. Don't ask stupid questions. So I'm not going to book myself to look like an idiot. But at the same time, I'm going to let the action flow speak for itself. Let the audience answer their own questions and then explain to them why the question was important that you were able to answer it on your own.
So you're telling me that what happened, I was going to say what, so you're telling me that what happened even just a few weeks ago is something that you want to remember and you believe the audience actually remembers too. Wow.
Yes. Amazing. I'm just there to help them remind, in case you forgot.
Right.
That's it.
Okay.
Here, bang.
I thought that what happened in the past, like, didn't really matter. We're all about the here and now. And it's like, that was in the past. Don't worry about that.
Right. What are you, Mark? Why are you following all that stuff? Well, just logic.
Maybe just a little logic. But so when it comes to that match, you've got Okada, Omega, this historic match going into it. You know the expectations that are there for that match. We all expect it to be great. Like I said, it's this great match. It's this historic match. Can you put into words what it's like being in the moment when that match is going on and you're calling it as it unfolds?
It's very hard to to be in that moment and to realize we're witnessing history. But in that match, right at the end, if you go to the last minute of the match and the two men are completely spent and each of them is laying with their head on the bottom rope side by side, that was where I knew we are seeing one of the greatest matches of all time. And I knew in that moment, the end was near. They were writing that this was just the beginning of the final scene. And sure enough, it was. Omega gets up, hits the ropes, V-trigger, see you later, one winged angel, and we got a new champ. I wanted to jump up and scream because I wanted to applaud because I knew that was, oh, this, look at this. I'm looking at the monitor and I'm pointing at Tom. Look, saying, look at this shot. Oh my God. You know, we do a lot of that pantomime. Like, oh, look how great this shot is. This is amazing. Yeah, I knew I was seeing something amazing, especially right at the end. And it's just, it feels good to be a part of that and have your voice on it.
And I think the thing was too, like you made a call and I believe you laid out for a minute and then you came back on. And like during that time, we can just hear an exasperated Don Callis freaking out, like under his breath a little bit, like, oh my God, oh, you know, like just whatever. And that was the cool thing. It wasn't like there was this planned line. Obviously, you weren't going to have that or anything like that. But just like this in the moment, like, oh, my God, what did we just see? And then, of course, Don's calling it from his perspective as well. And he's got a different perspective from a standpoint that this is a guy that he's known for his entire life or for all of his wrestling life. Basically, he's known Kenny Omega. I mean, being fellow Canadians and whatnot. So just to see the freak out of him, but also just, I think it was very authentic the way to see that as well from his perspective and seeing Kenny win. I mean, I really enjoyed the end of the call of that match. It worked out great.
Thank you. Yeah. There's not a lot of need for preparation in something like that. It's just let the story unfold and how are Don's real emotions. And again, he's not just an Omega sycophant, a fanboy. He was trained in wrestling, Don was, by Omega's uncle, the Golden Sheik. Mm-hmm. So there's a familial connection going back for Don's entire life in wrestling and has known Omega since Kenny was a teenager. And here they are today. And what a night for Winnipeg with Jericho taking the Intercontinental title and for Omega winning the main event with Don Callis on the call. Throw Elgin in the mix. It was a great night for Canada. It's a lot of fun. I'm actually hoping he's going to drop dead one day. Not on the air, maybe in the street. That'd be fine.
I was going to say, was there any point during that match where you thought you were going to have to give Don CPR?
I would completely forget how to. I am first aid trained from the American Red Cross, but it is in Japan, so I'm not quite sure if that, you know, holds legalities. Maybe somebody else will get to it. I don't know. But here, don't break the headset, Don. Let me have that. Let me put this up here on the table. And I'm already like motioning for Chase Owens or David Finley or somebody to sit it. Sit here, put this headset on while they treat Don. Is anybody treating Don yet? No, he'll be fine. Trust me. Why is he turning blue?
Here's the thing, though. If Don did actually had a medical episode, would we really know? Because we'd all believe it's a work.
We would never wish that on him.
Of course not. I don't want to, but I'm just saying, like, Don's going to work everybody. That's what he does. He has fun with it.
That's true. Yeah, he definitely would. I'll give you a quick look at our pre-production meetings, by the way. It's me doing Don Callis impressions, which kind of sounds like this. Who is that? Why is he here? He's a mark. Stop looking at me. Don't shake my hand. And that's pretty much it. And then we just go, when do we start? Okay. Here we go. That's it. And, you know, how's the family? What's going on? Everybody okay? All right, good.
Yep.
Let's go to work.
Let's go to work. Let's get this done, man. Got stuff to do here. Let's get down to it. He's a pro. He gets into it. He knows what he's doing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So you've got the G1 that is coming up, obviously, July 14th, August 12th. All 19 shows are going to have English commentary on New Japan World. What's it going to be like for you calling all of that and like the preparation going into 19 shows within like a month?
Well, it's a culmination of 2 years of effort on my part to get New Japan World to broadcast all of the G1 in English. I knew that the audience was there, would be there. I knew the anticipation would be extremely high once the announcement was made, because this is what fans want. You know, we talked about the inevitability of crossover between, you know, partners of Rev Pro, you know, the one price gets you into all. There was the same inevitability about the G1. We have to broadcast that whole tournament and eventually every show in English and eventually every show live in English. That's just where we're going. If whatever broadcast New Japan has live in Japanese, they were also going to have it live in English. As far as prep, the groundwork for it was kind of laid last year because I did the first 4 events, then went home and did the last 3. So I knew going in, hey, the last time these B-block wrestlers were in action, here were the results. Here's where everybody stands. And now tonight, they're back in action once again. Our next event tomorrow, 24 hours from now, will feature the A-block. And here's where they stand. And it's just building on that, taking in, like I said before, about reading, you know, some stuff online. Some fans think that now so-and-so is in the driver's seat because he sits at 6 points. And, you know, where is the inevitable? You know, usually the winner of G1 needs to be at least minimum 10 to be in a conversation, and 12 wins you the block. So if you're at that 11-point average, where is that going to put you? Let's just see. But I'm just amazed at how these the outpouring and the response has been so positive. I knew the announcement was coming that all 19 shows were going to be in English for this year's G1. I knew it was going to be part of the announcement that was made, I think it was on June 19th from Kazuna Road at Corkin. But I didn't anticipate that the feedback was going to be so positive from the fans, at, like I saw on social media. So that made me feel great. It's like, yes, this is going to work. The feedback is enormous. And everybody is just going to be along for the ride. We just can't wait for the journey to start.
Will this be the longest you've spent in Japan at one time?
I did all of March for the New Japan Cup. Mm-hmm. But this is going to be more travel and more shows. There were a lot of days off in the month of March, and it wasn't quite a full calendar month like this is. But yeah, it's going to, because I leave the 12th of July and come back on the 13th of August. So this will be my longest time away from home. That'll be an issue. That's problematic, but it's for the greater good.
Right. How's your Japanese these days?
It's not good.
No.
Because how can I learn Japanese? And there's so many different opinions on it. You can learn from, you know, you can take a Rosetta Stone, but then that teaches you sort of, but the best way to learn is, once you kind of know your vocabulary, is to have conversation with people. And I don't have enough conversation with Japanese people to be able to use it enough.
Right.
And all my friends in Japan, they want to learn English. So that's actually probably how I should be taking advantage of that more, and just say, hey, you speak English to me and I'll speak Japanese to you, and we'll correct each other along the way.
But that's the problem, is that there's so many different dialects of Japanese from depending on where you live in the country.
And there are a lot of, you know, smashed and blended words that everybody kind of knows, you know, like what we have here with somebody saying morning, sup, those types of things.
Sure.
We know what that means, but they have similar in Japanese. So while you're going to learn, you know, in the textbook or on the tape series or whatever it is, you're going to learn the proper way to say it. You're not going to learn the slang, or you're not going to learn the regional dialect. You're not going to learn the whatever. And, well, okay. So you do your best. It needs to get better. But everybody in Japan is focused on trying to learn as much English as they can, especially in the service industry, because the Olympics are going to be there in 2 years. And everybody has said, hey, listen, from the government on down, it'd be nice if you guys could learn some English, because I think it'll help once all the foreigners get here, especially all, because the English seems to be the kind of the one language that kind of everybody knows a little bit.
Right.
So there are a lot of folks focused on that, especially those, like I said, in the service industry. But I'm going to continue to work on my Japanese. I think it'll be better by the end of this month.
Good. Well, because last year's G1 was so good, and there is an argument that could be made that it was arguably the best G1 climax that we've ever seen. Is that a good thing to have those kind of expectations going into it this year, or can it be a bad thing or a dangerous thing because those expectations are so high?
I think both points are fair. Let's touch on the first one, let's touch on the kind of the one that jumps off the page to me, which is the danger factor of it. Will guys work too hard to top what they personally did last year, or what is anticipated from them? And if you look at a Kota Ibushi, he's a madman, right? We know that. How crazy will he go in order to prove his point, in order to win the match, knowing that this is just one of 9 singles matches that he's guaranteed to have? Yes, it's a fear. It's a concern. It's something to keep an eye on. From the fans' perspective, is there an opportunity for letdown? Is there an opportunity for disappointment. I think we're, you know, prisoners of the moment. And I think the snap reaction last year was that last year's G1 was the greatest of all time. They would say that after each night. How could tomorrow top it? Well, it just does. And some people liked Toro Yano versus Kenny Omega. Some people loved it. Some people hated it. But we're not going to see another match like that in the G1. And we didn't. So I think that's really where everybody should look. What's going to stand out? What's going to be memorable? And hopefully the memorability comes from not how high we can jump off of something, only to jump higher off of something tomorrow, but rather what story can we tell that's unique, that hasn't been told before, and will never be told again.
And I think when I look at who's in the tournament this year, when I look at the blocks, I can sit here and think in my mind, and I could be dead wrong, like, I've got an idea of who it could come down to, but I have no idea who's going to win. I mean, this is wide open. I mean, I could probably go through and reasonably say maybe 8, maybe 10 people, depending on whatever direction they want to do of, you know, somebody that's already, you know, been, you know, IWGP champion, somebody that's already won a G1. Maybe it's a newcomer to win the G1, somebody, you know, on their way up. I mean, I think it's wide open when it comes to where this tournament is going to go.
I think a safe, a good part to start with is the top four. And the top four is Omega, Okada, Tanahashi, Naito. Okay, there's a safe bet for starters. But that I forget the stat. Whichever block the champion is in, the winner hasn't come from. Something like that in a long time. Okay, so does that mean that who shares B block with Omega is in a tougher spot because of historical precedent? I'm not sure. And then you start to look, did anybody think that Hirooki Goto was going to be a finalist 2 years ago? No. Okay, so do we have upset special? Do we have somebody getting in on a unique set of circumstances like we did 2 years ago? Or does it hold form? And I think the safe, in a long tournament, you're better to bet your safe money. And who are your tried and true? Who are your signature brands? And let's focus from there. So I think you can peel off. Listen, a lot of folks would love to see Tomohiro Ishii in the finals. But precedent being what it is, I don't think he's going to make it. And I think you're safe with your top four plus. Now, do we put Ibushi in that? I think you have to, right? But yeah, he faces Omega on the last night. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to see Ibushi versus Omega in the Dome, don't they? How are we going to get there if these two men meet on the final night? Who's going to win the block, let alone the final, if these two men are colliding on the final night? What about Jay White? What about Jay White and Okada meeting on the first night? That, to me, it screams of an upset. Now, does that mean that, you know, Jay's going to go through the rest of the tournament and middle along and finish with 8 points? Eh, maybe. Or does he ride that wave of momentum? What about Sonata? What about Evil? Kind of that second tier. What about the Goto, the Ishii? What about Juice? And what about Zach? What about Suzuki? Well, now you start to deepen that field a little bit. Now we're back, Brian, where you were. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. Now I've got to start to think about these other 6-8 guys. Look on it. I pretty much wind up with everybody except Yano in the finals.
Yeah, no, right?
By the time this conversation is done.
Exactly. That's the good thing going into it, is that you can see a bunch of different scenarios. Like, you know, sooner or later, we're going to see Okada Omega 5. Now, could we see it at the finals here? Possibly. I don't think so, but possibly. I mean, even if we don't see it here, like I said, we're going to see it at some point. So does that mean we're going to see it, you know, in January, you know, at Wrestle Kingdom? Or are we going to see it sometime next year? Who knows? Maybe we won't see that match again for, you know, 18 months from now. But sooner or later, we're going to get it. It's just when. And the story that can be told to get there, whenever it happens, and there's plenty of stories to be told between now and then to get to that point again.
Right. And when you look at the finals of A block coming down, if in theory, to the last match between Okada and Tanahashi, I think that they wrote the final chapter of their saga when Okada won back in May at Dontaku, didn't he? Finally, you know, take over. But again, can't Tanahashi win? Well, of course he can win.
Of course he
can.
Oh
my gosh. And if we go to a draw again, what happens? That's why, to me, it's the greatest tournament. It's just wonderful. I thought there were two things going in that I worried about. Number one, there's so many guys that they could have been in this tournament. Are they going to expand the field? And I'm thankful they didn't. I think 20 is the perfect number. And 9 singles matches and 19 events over 27 days just works. Yes, it's awful. It's the longest period of guys' lives, and yes, it's going to shorten careers. But if it was any more, it would shorten those careers faster. So I'm happy that they kept it at that.
I was going to say, is there a way to expand it to where it doesn't go for 27 days, but maybe it goes for, say, 40 days?
Yes, but I think it only brings out the torture more.
Yeah,
I think it just lengthens it. And but you don't want to do it over the span of, you don't want to do it any less. And it was, I think, 3 years ago now that they began that every other block, every other night scenario. So it's all A, and then it's all B, then it's all A, then it's all B. That has helped a little bit, but the guys are in tag matches the other night. So come on. They're not exactly getting a night off. And then the other thought was, how many newcomers are going to be in this tournament and how hard is it to get in? There were some folks that were like, Taichi deserves in, Toa Inari, David Finley, some outside names, et cetera, et cetera. We should park Yoshihashi and Toriano and Togi Makabe on the sidelines and let's throw 3 newcomers in. You know, Jeff Cobb deserves in. Walter, what about him? What about? Okay. It doesn't mean we have to do it this year, but it does mean that eventually it is going to happen and that the competition throughout the year, realizing that you have to perform well and that you have to be at the best all the time, means something. That it can't just be all of a sudden, well, it's G1 time to go to work. No, you got to have your big boy pants on 12 months a year and every match counts. And now we start the conversation on August 14th as to, well, who's going to start petitioning themselves for a spot in a G1 29 that they didn't get in last year when they felt like they should have? Or are you going to be pissy and cry and be a baby? What are you going to do? What does Finley need to do? Well, I think we all know what Finley needs to do. Finley needs to tighten his body up and he needs to work on his physique a little bit more and look more like a star. And if he does that, he's got to be in the conversation. Inari just needs more experience. Taichi was close, but it didn't work out. So what's he going to do? Pissy pants? Or is he going to continue to be that agitator? Is he going to be even more over the top next year? Makabe's only got so many left in him. We know that. Who's going to take his spot? And Yoshihashi had better realize, man, I was on the bubble. And at least I may not have been on the bubble with the office, but I'm on the bubble with the fans. And there's some folks that don't think I deserve in. Yeah, I beat Omega in the first match a couple of years ago. But I had a new dick last year. And he sleptwalked through that match with Naito last year and didn't have a signature moment, in my opinion. He needs to have one this year in the tournament. And he needs to have some after the tournament. So that's the takeaway for me.
So now that Okada, his legendary reign as the IWGP heavyweight champion, has come to an end, at least for now, we'll see if he wins the championship back. But we've seen this record long title reign that he was on up until Dominion, when, of course, Omega beat him. What was it like from your perspective to watch him on that run and have those incredible title defenses that he had over the previous 2 years?
I called every title match. All 12 title defenses. I didn't imagine that it was going to go this long, and that I thought a turning point bringing about an end to the reign was February 2017's match against Minoru Suzuki. And by the end of that tour, Okada was black and blue from his hip to his ankle, from all the kicks and all of the pulling on the leg and the chair shots and everything else. I didn't think that his body was going to hold up much further beyond that. And, you know, would it be Shibata? I kind of thought it was going to be Shibata, but it wasn't. And, you know, in a tragic set of circumstances, it probably never will be. Each kind of step along the way. And then I thought, if it didn't end in February of 2017, January 2018 with Tetsuya Naito at Wrestle Kingdom, this is where the reign comes to an end. And me and 40,000 others collectively gasped when Okada won. Not because we don't love Okada, but because we all had in our mind Naito's winning. Not so fast, my friend, to quote Lee Corso. So then at that point, I was like, well, all bets are off. I don't know when this is going to end. And I, you know, did preview shows for, you know, several other events. And I was like, who are you picking to win? I can never pick against Okada because he's overcome the circumstances so many times. How in the world can you do this? And then you start to do the math, and I'm starting to look, and I'm doing my, you know, days since calculator in Google. And, you know, from April 10th, 2016 until today, how many days is that? Jesus, look at all these days. What's happened since then? What does this many days represent in terms of other, you know, increments of time? Well, it's this many, you know, million seconds, you know, this many weeks, other things that have happened since then. You know, he could have had, you know, could have almost had two babies in that time. It's amazing when you think about what it is, and how history will treat it. Obviously 11 title reigns for Tanahashi is a footnote in history now, with 12 and the days as champ. I think best streak of all time in New Japan history.
It's incredible. I don't know if it will ever be matched again, or if it is, it's going to be a while. You know, as great as Kenny Omega is, I don't know if he's going to get to that point. There's something that's to be said about what Okada did. And obviously being a Japanese superstar, I think that plays into it. It means a lot that Okada is the guy that beat him. Or I mean, Omega is the guy that beat him. But I think it's going to be a while before anybody even gets close to what Okada did on that run.
Yeah, I don't see. And again, over the last few years, that title has been safe around the waist of the champion, regardless of who has held it. That there have been very few title changes. It went through a brisk period with AJ when he was there, but kind of settled down, you know, in the interim. Naito only had the one brief period with it. But other than that, it has been solid reigns that had lasted a while. So how do we, you know, five, six names have held the title since, what, in the last 7 years, I think? And that's just doing off the top of my head. So you're always safe. It's like a stock. You want to hold it. You know, we're not day trading the IWGP heavyweight title. And the longer you hold on to it, the more prestigious it becomes. I don't anticipate Cody winning in San Francisco, for example, with the G1 special, only because I'd be completely shocked that Omega finally beats Okada only to lose in his first title defense. I think there's just too much invested in that. I just don't anticipate that happening. But I thought Shibata was going to win. I thought Naito was going to win, and I've been wrong before. So let's see where that is. And I continue to get surprised along the way. I hardly know everything, right? As you know. Don't tell me how long. 20 years?
Something like that, yeah. Yeah.
Don't go back in the archives and you know, pull out some of my predictions. I wouldn't look so good.
I'm going to tell you this, man. I've had some people hit me up, especially over the last couple of years, like, hey, why don't you put some of the old shows out there? And I'm sitting there going, you know what? I don't even know if I want to hear what I said about that promotion or that match or whatever at that time. I'm like, oh my God, what did I say? I'm like, you look like an idiot.
There's no way Vince McMahon is going to be out of business. I'm telling you, at the start of the 21st century, there's no way he's going to survive.
I do have the probably
declarative statement.
Well, I do have the close to annual Jeff Jarrett thing going, you can't believe we're still in business, can you, Brian? Like kind of that thing, which he did. He did say to me flat out after their first anniversary, like got out of a match and within 30 minutes, I think was on live radio with us, flat out called me out like that. Like, you didn't think we'd be in business right now, did you? It's like, no, I didn't. I was like, and you almost worked after like 6 weeks, Jeff. I'm like, what do you want me to say?
Don't get panicky. If it wasn't for Dixie Carter being a mark, forget it. But yeah, so these, and like I said before, you know, we're all prisoners of the moment. That's the greatest thing we've ever seen ever, and nothing will ever supplant it until the next.
Yeah.
How can, you know, but again, I got a note from Dave Meltzer in the hours following Dominion, and he said that he thinks it's the greatest match that he's ever seen. He watched it with a bunch of friends who, you know, are different age ranges of fans, but most of them are longtime fans, and they seem to agree. And but again, it's something's going to top it.
Yeah. Well, here's the question we all want to know, Kevin. We need the answer to this. How many stars did you give Omega Okada for?
I'm not one in the star making business.
I'm not either.
I just go, okay, it is one person's opinion. I'm fine with 7. I felt like it ranked ahead of the matches that it followed a logical pattern for me. If the first got, what did it get, 6?
Yeah.
And then it's ticked up and then ticked up. And now here's where we are at 7. Well, yeah, sure. I felt like as I was calling Taiji Ishimori and Hiromu Takahashi final best super junior on June the 4th, I'm already doing the math in my head. I'm thinking, how is this not at that 6 level? 35 minutes, it's epic. They're going wild. And Dave gave it 5.5 with the idea that he did not want to reward such recklessness, such danger. Okay, that's fair. It's his rating scale. I'm sure. Cool with it. And the fact that it's 7, if it gets people talking, gets people upset, makes people happy, cool. Go for it. I love it. I think that what Dave has meant to the wrestling industry, I think we would both agree, has been immeasurable. From somebody who, when I first broke in 1991, he was somebody that, at least from the people who broke me into the business, were like, he's the enemy. He's exposing our business. You shouldn't like him. You shouldn't talk to him. And yet when I got to WWE, publicly told the same thing, but then privately finding out that they were in regular communication with him all the time. And then starting to realize, there is a greater good. And now I see the greater good in a much larger scale because of the conversation related to the star rating and how this has driven, especially in social media. And when I got the chance to do the post game with him in Long Beach after the Golden Lovers and the Young Bucks, you know, I'm sitting there going, I'm marking out a little bit. I'm not going to lie, Brian. I'm sitting there going, I'm standing next to Dave Meltzer, you know, the most well-known wrestling journalist that there is, and somebody who's front and center in a lot of these conversations about today versus yesterday. Just pretty damn cool.
Yeah. I mean, I've been to stuff with Dave, you know, what was it? A couple of years ago, we went and did the, it was for one of the 2K releases. And there was some different talent that were available for interviews. And Dave was freaking out because his tape recorder broke, you know, or his audio recorder broke. He's like, what am I going to do? And I said, Dave, here, take my phone, record on this. I'll make sure you get it. I've got something else to record on. So I'm off in one corner and Dave Meltzer is off somewhere else with my phone interviewing whatever WWE talent he can, you know?
Right.
And then, you know, we did something even later. Like we did like a stand up talking about like what happened or whatever. I'm like, that's Dave. That's right there. It's like, this is pretty damn cool. I'm sitting here with Dave, you know, we're just talking about wrestling. It's funny because like the star rating, it's just like you said, it's one man's opinion and it's an educated opinion. It's an insightful opinion, but it's his opinion. And I just find it funny how bent out of shape some people get over a star rating. Like, do you really want to get that wound up over somebody else's opinion? I mean, it's like I said, it's a very informed opinion, but it's his opinion. You don't have to agree with it. It's not like he's saying, you know, some crap match that, you know, was on TV for 2 minutes is the best thing going. I mean, I think we all know better than that, but it's just, hey, this is the way that I look at it. And this is what I think it gets. And just people just get all, you know, wound up over it for whatever reason.
The idea too of, you know, this star rating scale and how it relates to history. Well, if you give Okada an Omega 7 and that broke the scale, then would you go back in history and reevaluate these other matches that had previously been capped at 5? And Dave said, well, who said they were capped at 5?
Right.
You know, it's subjective.
Right.
It allows us to have debate and talk.
And you can't go back in time to rate something differently, because it's not only the match they have, it's at the time they have and the way that wrestling is presented at the time and just the way that the matches are. I mean, you can't sit there and really compare eras. You can sit there and say, I enjoy this and I enjoy that, but it's a different context when you watch something at that time compared to now.
Right. And, you know, truly, the way I was broke into the industry and the kind of my core belief today is, really, the only number that matters is the dollars in the box office.
Yep.
How much did the match make? You can have an artistic success all you want. I'm sure there have been many great matches that have happened in obscure locations in front of 40 people. Great. Fantastic. I'm glad you had a great match, but didn't draw. So the fact that 12,000 plus, Osaka Joe Hall, 28 days in advance, a sellout, whereas a few years ago, when they started running Osaka Joe again, I think it was AJ and Okada, when Okada won the belt back July 5th, 2015, they had 9,500 in the building. Okay, so there you go. That to me says that the business is a little bit hotter in terms of New Japan now, that they're able to sell out this many number of seats a month in advance. And that to me is the true measuring stick by which wrestling should be measured. But
yeah.
Hey, we've got to talk about something, don't we?
Yeah.
What else can we? Well, what else do we get to, you know, wring our hands over?
Tell me about it. Let's end on this. Let me ask you about one other thing, because you talked about who made it into the G1 this year. We've got those 20. You actually had something on Twitter where you said, "Hey, if there was ever a block C, let's kind of armchair quarterback," and you had a list of people. Let me ask you this though: if you had to do totally fantasy booking, and it's nothing against any of those guys that you mentioned there in Block C, but if it was opened up to everybody in the world for G1, what other guys do you think you would like to see or can envision with these kind of dream scenarios?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, this was a tweet that I had sort of been formulating in my head. And my one caveat, which a lot of people didn't get, was they had to have previously competed in New Japan this calendar year. Let's make it easy, right?
Right.
Because once we get in, if we opened it up and we extend our borders to anybody,
well,
then you start to throw a Matt Riddle in. No, not WWE contract. I'm talking about available talent. Sure.
What if it was WWE?
Anybody?
Yeah, anybody.
All right. I'd want to see, oh my God, Cesaro. Daniel Bryan.
Yep. AJ?
AJ and Nakamura.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going roster here.
Seth Rollins?
Yeah.
What about Finn Balor?
Well, sure. Now we're just playing the greatest hits. Then we throw Carl Anderson in the mix too. I mean, the G1 finalist 2012.
It's only 20. We can only have 20 people.
Jesus.
I'm just saying, hey, man, you got to play by some kind of
rules. But I threw another block of what, 10?
Well, I'm trying to make this.
That's not even talking about like Riddle, Walter, guys like that.
Right.
Wait a minute. What NXT names?
No, yeah, true.
I thought Adam Cole should have been in the G1. I think Jay Lethal definitely should be. I don't care.
Right.
I wrote his name last, but he was the first one that I put at the top of the list.
He was one that I was
sort of like wringing my hands over this year. Like, how in the hell is Jay Lethal not in the G1? Jesus.
I
think he's great.
And I know, a spoiler alert, everybody, if you don't know it already, I love that Jay Lethal won the Ring of Honor Championship. That guy is just an incredible talent and such a class act. And you want to talk about somebody that can represent your company. I mean, Jay Lethal is right there. Just right there, man. I mean, just, I think he's extremely underappreciated, even considering all the success that he's had.
Take the success from within the ropes and put that to the side and think about from a PR perspective what he's meant to the company. And there you go. He is tireless in his efforts in promoting Ring of Honor. We need you at a TV station at 6 o'clock in the morning. I know it's midnight tonight, but tonight, no problem. We need you at a radio station. No problem. Can you do an appearance? Yeah. And never even blink an eye. and never ask for anything extra. And just a pro's pro. And Aunt shows up on time. We joked about being early to shows. And, you know, some guys within Ring of Honor sort of take a laissez-faire attitude. And he was like, no, that bothers me. I hate that. I want to be to the building early. I want to set an example. That's it right there. He's the best. He's the number one guy in Ring of Honor, in my opinion, in the last 10 years from an overall standpoint with in-ring success, out of the ring success. You know, left the company at 21 to come back at 26 as his own man, and has grown and grown and grown and grown, not just as a wrestler, but as a professional. And how WWE never really took a serious look at him, I don't think, is mind-blowing, because he's fantastic.
I agree.
We could fantasy book this thing out, and we could book like two or three simultaneous G1s, because now you're starting to have a cut line within WWE guys.
Right.
And now you're starting to go, well, can they, and the first thing I question is not can they work the style, but can their bodies hold up?
I think you do the New Japan G1, and then you'd have another two blocks of 10 of people that were not in New Japan. And then you'd have whoever won the New Japan G1 face the winner of everybody else in the world.
I love that idea. A true World Series.
I like it.
Book it.
Let's do it, man.
Fritz and Brian Fritz, Kevin Kelly present.
I like it. We can make
that
happen.
Top billing.
Oh, I like that too. That's nice.
Yeah, we
alphabetical order.
Well, of course, yeah. And there's no downside to it all. I mean, it's the pros of the World Baseball Classic without the confines of the calendar. Because that's always the enemy of that. It's the World Cup of soccer. I mean, you look at the global, as I'm flying back from the UK yesterday and I'm on the train at Chicago O'Hare going from one terminal to the next, and there's a Serbian fan talking to an England fan, a Germany fan, a Slovakian fan, all standing within one little quadrant of the car of the one train that I was on at that span of time, and all having simultaneous conversations about the World Cup. This could be certainly not to that scale, but could be just as much fun for debate for wrestling fans.
Let's get Hot Topic to sponsor it. Taken care of. Done. Boom.
Let's do it. Yes.
And Fire Pro.
Maybe I love it.
We'll get some Fire Pro behind it to throw some money. Help us out.
Well, I'm just like, you know, we have to have the Bucks on it because they're the draw.
Sure.
They draw everything. So we got to figure out a way to have them involved in this tournament. Maybe we do, you know, we have great tag team undercard matches and we let the Young Bucks and Marty and these guys and do all of these different things. We've got to have that presence. Just take the all-in approach and just continue to do it.
It's so amazing how good tag team wrestling is everywhere in the world except for one place. It's amazing.
Well,
I say that, but you know what? Even
it's kind
even,
of been the
yeah, that's been the MO for a little while. I mean, it's not to downgrade the talent. It's just the booking.
Never ever been something that has been thought of highly. I know Bubba Ray and I talked about him wanting to change that company's perspective, and they certainly did for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
With matches with Edge and Christian and the Hardys.
Yeah, that was like 2 years.
There are no teams, multiple teams, that equate to what those teams meant back then.
Right.
And therefore, every team that is brought in is either dumbed down, split up, or somehow used as ways to elevate the singles guys. That's just, there is some territory, it's not a tag team territory. Okay, I got you. You know, the Crockett's used to be a tag team territory, and then George Scott came in and changed the mindset of the territory. Same with WWF. It was a tag team territory in the 60s, and then Bruno on top became single big man. And that's how you do it.
Yeah, that's how you do it, you know. I just think there's a lot of talent. I just look at it going, man, there's a lot of talent that's out there. Even like on Raw, they did a tag team match on there. It was kind of these makeshift tag teams, and it was a hot match. I mean, they did, was it Reigns and Rollins against Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler. And that was a hot tag team match for 15 minutes. It's just like, you know, these guys don't even regular tag.
By the way, all four of those guys were in, as you cut me off, and we're like, wait, we got a cat. I kind of cut myself off. Like, wait, how many guys? Because I'm saying Drew McIntyre. I'm saying Dolph Ziggler in my head.
Right.
And it's so funny that you talk about this throw together tag team, and I'm like, all four of these guys would be in this conversation for this other G1 that we're wanting to run. Think about how good those four guys are right there.
I don't look at it as cutting you off. I look at it as bailing you out because, you know, I know where people are going to take this conversation.
Yeah, we could just run for days with it. But you think about it and just look at the way, when I was there, the tech team titles, well, we'll just throw two guys together that really don't like each other or that are facing each other in the main event of the upcoming pay-per-view, you know, that good friends, better enemies type of BS. They really don't like each other, The Rock and Austin, but somehow they win the tag team titles. Well, what about the team that they beat? And what does that do to the tag team titles?
Yeah.
It makes them second tier. And you do that over enough long enough period of time, and you set a culture of devaluation and lack of appreciation. And nothing has changed because the same guy has the final say on the show. So why would fans anticipate anything else being different?
That's a good question.
Same management in place.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, at least we're not in that peephole era. Warrior had the line during the, that 03 to 05 period where it was like WWE's show is so bad. Now you have to watch it through a peephole. Like, I just felt like everybody had an affliction. Everybody, you know, from Matt Morgan stuttering to the Katie Vick thing to the Gene Snitsky thing to all of these just perverse, twisted, disgusting, gross, you know, Edge and Lita stuff. It wasn't my cup of tea at all. I hated it, hated every second of it, refused to watch it. Thank God that's over. And thank God we're in this PG era.
Absolutely.
And for everybody who pines about, you know, TV, oh, what, it'd be so much better if it was TV-14. Go back and watch some of that crap and get back to me. No thanks.
Yeah. Let's wrap it up with this. Of course, we need to remind everybody, New Japan G1 special coming up Saturday at the Cow Palace in San Francisco. Be airing on Access TV. Everybody can watch that on Saturday night, including the big, a 12-hour marathon that's leading up to that?
It's a whole day of Bullet Club.
Yep, whole day of Bullet Club. Everything is fine with Bullet Club. You know, so get to watch all of the latest when it comes to New Japan. Then you get the big show, the G1 special on Saturday night. And everybody, get ready for the G1 Climax, July 14th, August 12th. All 19 shows, English commentary, Kevin Kelly on the call. Go to njpwworld.com, subscribe there, and enjoy all of the shows. Enjoy the library of all of the different New Japan shows there. And you definitely get your money's worth, and the G1 is going to be incredible again this year. So, Kevin, always appreciate the time. Everybody can follow you on Twitter. It's at Real Kevin Kelly, and rest up your voice. You got some big shows to call coming up here.
We're all good. It's just going to be a lot of coffee and a lot of adrenaline. So, yeah, we're gonna go hard through this tournament. And I'll sleep when I'm dead. It'll be great. I can't wait.
Good. Well, I'm looking forward to it. Thanks, Kevin. Always appreciate it, man.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks again to Kevin Kelly for joining me on the podcast. I have known Kevin for about 20 years now and always enjoy the conversations that we have. We didn't even talk that much WWE. And there was really no need to get into WWE. We talked about it a little bit on the end. And by the way, the times where I was talking about WWE, I wasn't trying to be like overtly negative about them. It's a little frustrating when it comes to some of their booking ideas. And I think other people are obviously frustrated. I've never been a big fan of what they do with tag teams for the most part. It seems like they very rarely focus on tag teams. I just think that a lot more can be done with that. So yeah, I brought that up as well. And we see tag team wrestling around the rest of the world and it can be fantastic. And it's just something that I think that wrestling is really missing out on, in that, you know, tag team wrestling used to be very, very important. And there's been different times over the past 20 years where it could be important. I think it's something that's being missed out on, and I would like to see more done. But that's why I had to bring it up the way that I did with Kevin. And he understands. And I think in a lot of different ways, he agrees. There's some things he's going to be more vocal on than other things. But hey, Kevin's in a great spot right now. You know, you talk about a guy that's been in the business for a while. He was in the business for a while. Then he was not in the business. And obviously, he's now back in wrestling and has been for a little while. And he's in a great spot in that he gets to call New Japan Pro Wrestling. He gets to call arguably the hottest wrestling on the planet right now when it comes to just pure in-ring action with an incredible, incredible roster of talent right now. He's in a great spot. And I'm looking forward to hearing him call the G1 tournament when it starts here in, you know, less than 2 weeks. And, you know, like Kevin said, he's going to be calling 19 shows over 27 days. He's going to be in Japan for close to a month. And everybody that watches the G1, if you're here in the United States or if you want to hear it in English, guess what? All 19 shows from the G1 are going to be done in English commentary as part of New Japan World, njpwworld.com. Sign up and you can watch all of the shows. Whether you want to watch them live or not, that's up to you, but you can watch all of the shows. And right now it's, I believe it's about $9 a month when it translates to US dollars. So I don't know what else, what it is elsewhere in the world, but it's cheap. I mean, it's under $10. So it's very affordable and it's worth your while. I'm telling you right now, it's worth your while. Even if you just want to watch the big shows, even if you don't watch all of the G1 and you say you watch like the first couple of nights and then you want to watch the last couple of nights, because those are going to be super exciting. And then, of course, the finals. I mean, it's worth it just for that alone. But you get your bang for your buck when it comes to the New Japan World subscription and watching all the shows online. So thanks again to everybody for listening. Quick reminder again, please subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on social media. We're on Twitter, at Between the Ropes. I am at Brian Fritz. Of course, you can go to facebook.com/Between the Ropes as well. And make sure you give me those ideas that I told you about earlier on in the podcast. Share your ideas, what content you would like to hear from us, audio, video, website, extra content on Patreon. Let me know what ideas you have. Hit me up on Twitter, at Between the Ropes. You can go to the Facebook page. I've got a post there. You can leave your ideas there. Or shoot me an email, btrmailbag@gmail.com. I'll be back in a couple of days. So today, as I'm taping this, it is a Tuesday night. Everybody can enjoy the 4th of July here in the United States. And I'm not going to be recording anything then on the holiday, but I will be recording the weekly Between the Ropes podcast on Thursday afternoon. That is the plan right now, Thursday afternoon. So be on the lookout for that, talking about everything that's going on in the week in WWE and elsewhere in wrestling. So all the big stories and TV and all the whatnot stuff when it comes to WWE and elsewhere. So thanks again, everybody. I will talk to you in a couple of days with the next podcast right here, Between the Ropes.